This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Oh, hi, my name's Jeanette and I'm now alcohol-free for around 150 days, which is a miracle, to say the least. I have been trying to go alcohol-free for about a decade, on and off, doing a month here, a week here, 2 months here, you know the score. But now I'm 150 days in and absolutely loving it. Life is so much better. Being part of the OTI community has helped me vastly. It's fun. It looks at what you're gaining, not what you're missing out, which was a mistake I made before. I always thought I was missing out on life when I wasn't drinking. Oh my God, how wrong was I? Life is great without a drink. Just try it.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It's an absolute joy to have you listening. If you are just joining us for the first time, a quick reintroduction as to who we are before we speak to today's guests. Yes, guests, not just the one today. It's a New Year special. We have two. My name is Sharon Hartley. Call me Shazza. I am from Lancashire in the northwest of England. I decided to take a break from alcohol in 2018. For 90 days. That was 3 years and 4 months ago. It's a long, long time now. Just celebrated my fourth alcohol-free Christmas, or at least I will have done when this podcast comes out. I used to be a daily drinker, at least a bottle of wine, ramped it up at weekends, decided I needed a break, decided to change everything. Hands down, it has been the best thing I have ever done. Could talk about it for hours and hours and hours. And every week we do on Over the Influence. I don't do this by myself. I am joined as well in the future, because he's in New Zealand, by my very tanned and very blonde co-host, Freddie. Morning, love.
Good morning, love. My name's Freddie. I am now over 1,000 days alcohol free. Not so long ago, my dry January would be a very wet January, and my life was full of broken promises, broken dreams, and broken wine bottles. But I decided to change my drinking habits, drink differently, put down the booze for good, and now I'm celebrating almost now my 3rd year alcohol-free. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so excited for the new year, and I'm so excited about our guest today. This is going to be a classic episode of Over the Influence.
Wonderful. That's a bit of a big intro there, Freddie. You've got in hard very early on.
that's the only way, Shazza.
Forget that. I'll move swiftly on. He used to be in the background. He's very much in the foreground. Our producer, Mr. Ben. Ben, background Ben, very alcohol free. Ben,
we've got two guests waiting here, so I'm going to keep this short. My name's Ben, I'm a producer, and I'm nearly 18 months alcohol free in just a few mere days. 18 months alcohol free. Didn't think that my relationship with alcohol was terrible until I gave up and looked back and realised that actually I wasn't drinking for fun anymore. I was drinking because I was stressed and alcohol was negatively affecting my life. Gave it for 3 months, loved it. Thought, carry on to 6. Loved it. Thought, carry on to 12. Loved it. And now I can confidently say that I'm not going to drink again because my life is so much better in so many ways. Right, quick, guests,
go. And that's 18 months in a nutshell. Absolutely superb. Enough about us. Moving on. Today's episode is really, really special. For the first time, we've not got one guest to bring to you today. No, we have two. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Richard Piper, CEO of Alcohol Change UK, to the podcast as well. We're going to be chatting to one of our Over the Influence community members, Danielle Cooper. Really, really excited to have you both here. First of all, Richard, welcome. Welcome to Over the Influence.
Welcome. What a lovely, warm welcome. I'm very pleased to be here, very excited for 2022. It's got to be better, right?
Hold that thought.
Don't say that, Richard. Don't say that.
Hold that thought. Now, this for us, it's brilliant to have you on the podcast because the focus of this episode, it's all about dry January. Now, to give you just a quick overview of myself and dry January, I failed every single year, only ever got to about 4 days. Dry January is something that Alcohol Change UK is all about. Let's just start there. What is it? What is it? And tell us about what you do.
Absolutely. So Alcohol Change UK exists basically to end alcohol harm. That's our job. We're not anti-alcohol. We don't think there's a problem with the substance. It's fantastic for getting viruses off hands, amongst other things. And it has been part of the human experience for like millennia. And we are adapted to be able to process small quantities of it. But alcohol harm causes massive amounts of sadness, misery to millions of people across the globe, and loads of people die early. You know, that is the truth. And, you know, many of us, and I was a drinker just like the three of you have described, or similar to how you three have described it, you know, we just don't associate that with an alcohol problem often until we've discovered the alternative. But actually, if you go around the liver wards of the UK or indeed anywhere in the world, cancer wards, heart wards, there will be people stuffed on those wards who've been drinking too much and didn't think they had a problem. Didn't think they had a problem, and they do. And many people, unfortunately, won't be leaving those wards. And of course, there's also the knock-on harms, all the harms that affect other people. And you know, bear with me, because this isn't nice, but we do have to accept this. Violence, physical violence, sexual violence, assault, child neglect, child abuse, fires, drownings, car accidents, drink driving, city centres that are too intimidating for people to go to, lives lived half fulfilled. This is the scale of alcohol harm in our society. So that's the terrible news. But the good news is it is entirely avoidable. And that's what keeps me going. That's what brings hope. And we want to be an organisation that brings hope and positivity to the world. And Dry January is absolutely, I think, a perfect encapsulation of that. You know, we're on record as an organisation of never having ever told anyone to do anything. We don't even tell the politicians what to do. We invite and encourage. We certainly don't tell anybody what to do or what not to do. But we do offer invitations to the world. And Dry January is one of our biggest and best known invitations to the world. I would like, if it's okay, to correct some key myths about Dry January. It's not about being dry forever. And many people who do it go on to have what we would call drink control. And that can include moderating. And we don't judge. We don't say that's wrong, that's bad. In fact, we don't have a view on that at all. It's entirely up to them what they do with that. The short-term period of abstinence, the dry bit in January, is what allows people to break the habit or sometimes make a start on breaking that habit. We can call it a habit. Low-level dependency would be the kind of a clinical word for it. But a habit is a good everyday word for it. And then people will go on to do whatever they want to do. Secondly, it's not just about January. I mean, it's an amazing brand, Dry January, but it does have these two problematic words in the brand, dry and January. It's about year-round control. It's always been about year-round control. Thirdly, it's not about fundraising. It's never been about fundraising. It's a behaviour change campaign. It's based on behavioural science. It's highly well-designed to deliver change. And it does that through the period of abstinence, but also the support tools that go around it. So we don't, the reason for the fundraising bit for me, I think is really important to get right. Because if we were saying, you know, you want to do something rubbish, like go in a bath of baked beans for a day, or jump out of an aeroplane, or do a marathon, or something that's really hard, really awful, but it's okay because your friends are going to give you money for doing that thing that's hard, that would be completely at odds with the Dry January concept, because it's not rubbish. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant, brilliant, brilliant experience. And then the fourth and probably the biggest myth about Dry January is that anyone can do it by just going dry in January. If you're just going to go dry on your own in January, awesome. You're not doing Dry January. Dry January is when you sign up for the campaign, Try Dry app, coaching emails, or the online forum. Any one of those things, taking part in our campaign. That's what Dry January is. Now, it's got so big that people use it in a kind of loose way to refer to anybody just going dry in the month. But the science on this is really, really clear. People who do Dry January are twice as successful at staying dry as people who just try going dry on their own. And people who do Dry January, less than 1% have the rebound effect in February, of drinking more. Whereas that figure was really high amongst people who just do it on their own. And the big figure, 6 months later. 6 months later, people who do Dry January, 2/3 of them are still drinking less. Whereas the people who just tried going dry on their own, literally all of them back to normal, no change. So on an average year, on average people. Now there'll be a few exceptions around that, but unfortunately, just going dry on your own in January is not the key. It's going dry in January as part of a group, as part of the Dry January campaign. And one of our biggest messages out there is to Pete, say, if you're going to do this, do it well, do it properly, have a great experience and do it. Do Dry January. Don't just try doing it on your own.
Richard, I'll just jump in there because I think this is a brilliant opportunity to introduce our second guest, talking of doing things as part of a team and as part of a community. She's called Danielle Cooper. She is an Over the Influence member. Danielle, it is wonderful to have you on the podcast. Hello to you.
Hello, Shaz. Hello, all of you. And thanks for having me on. It's an absolute honour because obviously I'm part of this community. I absolutely love it. And yeah, I'm just amazing. In my element.
Thank you so much. It is brilliant to have you here. We've got so much to talk to Richard about. We want to talk to you about your experiences of Dry January in the past. If you wouldn't mind, just tell us a little bit about you. Danielle, who are you? What do you do? Where are you from?
Sure. Okay. So, you know my name. I'm from Dublin originally, and I moved over to the UK about 18 years ago with my family when I was a teenager. And I don't know what to say about myself. I work in Leeds. I work for an IT consultancy as a training manager, and I'm just absolutely loving life now that I'm alcohol free, and you didn't even pay me to say that. So there you go.
Absolutely wonderful. So Danielle, obviously this is a really special episode. We are hearing loads from Richard, CEO of Alcohol Change UK, talking specifically on this episode about Dry January, something that you have succeeded at, but in the past it's not always been the case. If you wouldn't mind, just share as much as you're happy, you know, with sharing with us, Danielle. Just take us back to your drinking days before you became a member of Over the Influence.
Sure. Okay. Well, very quick pit stop tour. I was exactly like most teenagers in UK, and I'm sure, you know, Ireland and the UK. And I started, you know, swigs of cider out of a massive 2-litre bottle with my friends when I was about 15. That progressed on to go into pubs quite young because as a female, you can get away with looking older, of course. And onward to the kind of clubbing days where I was a bit of a party animal and enjoyed a drink. You know, when I used to go clubbing, I was all about the music, of course. But yeah, drink was a big part of that. They weren't really problematic days for me drinking. It was more so when I got into drinking in my 20s that I found I would take things to the extreme. It was sometimes a bit of a roll of a dice. And that kind of led me up to today. I'm 38 years of age now. And that, you know, going from my 20s into my 30s, I realised, ooh, hang on a second, more often than not, I'm drinking more than I want to here. And sometimes, you know, putting myself in dangerous situations, vulnerable situations, thinking, you know, on nights out, I can just venture off on my own, everything will be fine. Thankfully, I came out of all of that relatively unscathed. But what really made me change my relationship with alcohol was in 2018, and it was Dry January was approaching, and I'm sorry, Richard, I didn't sign up, but I basically just wanted to not have alcohol. And I don't even think I called it Dry January. It was like, I'm not drinking after Christmas and New Year. It's not happening. I'm going to give it up for a month. And I did that, and it was great. I felt fantastic. And then I thought, well, I've done a dry month. That's great. Went out on a night out, went out for a meal, made friends with the restaurant people who, you know, the people who were serving us, they gave us free shots of God knows what. And I just remember waking up the next day to a awful smell and just feeling the pillow beside me. And I'd been sick in my sleep, and I lived on my own at the time. I didn't live with the boyfriend I was seeing at the time, and it scared the living daylights out of me. I thought, had I been sleeping on my back, God knows, you know, I might not be here to tell you this. And believe me, that's not, you know, that's like the tip of the iceberg in terms of bad things that have happened, you know, in terms of me drinking over the years. I was just your average kind of go out and get pissed person. I didn't really drink in the week and then binged at the weekends. Dry January 2018, you know, we had that night out. And then after that, I just thought, I can't do this anymore. So I made the decision to go sober just like that. So I thought, oh, I just won't drink anymore. And I thought it was the best idea ever. Read a couple of quitlet books, one of them being Catherine Gray's The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober, which was fantastic. I could really relate to her. And then the summer came. So that was like February till about May. I think I did about 100 days and a barbecue was happening. So I basically what I'd done throughout those 3 months, which I only realized this now, was I white knuckled the hell out of it. I avoided all social situations. Didn't really see my friends much, just really tried everything I could do to just keep myself enclosed in this little alcohol-free cocoon. And as Richard has touched on, and as you guys have touched on, you can't do it alone. You just cannot. It's impossible. You will isolate yourself from the world. It's not fun. And I was miserable. You know, I wasn't happy for those 3 months. So I did end up drinking at that barbecue. And then I had a few dry stints since then. And only this year, when I started really making sober connections, both on Instagram, on the Over the Influence membership group, you know, on the Zoom calls that you guys run, only then did I start to feel like, oh, I know what they're talking about now. You know, Shaz, when you say, oh my God, your life beyond your wildest dreams, and it's just amazing, you know, the way you sing about sobriety, that's started happening for me. But only now, because I had to make the change. I had to make some radical changes, in fact. And now I'm slowly but surely able to put myself in environments that used to be triggering, and I'm actually okay. It's been an evolution, you know, but it's been an incredible journey so far, and I am just stoked as to what's going to come next.
Richard, would you mind if we dug into your personal story a bit? You told us about Dry January, but what's your personal relationship with alcohol, and would you mind telling us your story?
Not at all. No, I'm very used to doing that. I'm very happy to do that. Probably a good example would be, it's a good place to start is the day I got offered this job at Alcohol Change UK. I told my wife, and she was very pleased with me, obviously, because I'd been looking for a job at that point. And I told my daughters, and my younger daughter said, "Do they know about you?" Pooh. Bang. And that was really eye-opening. I'd done Dry January, non-signed up, not doing it properly, done it badly in 2016. And I hadn't engaged, that was the problem. I hadn't engaged properly with the alcohol issue. I'd done it mainly for weight reasons. And that was a driver, that's okay. But I kind of missed out so much as a result of that. I got to the point in February where I kind of worked out how many units of alcohol and how many calories of alcohol I was going to drink. And then would make my food fit around that rather than the other way around. So although I'd kind of done it, I hadn't learned a thing, I would say. And that's what I would always say Dry January is about, one thing. Dry January is about learning. And I think that's what I hope we can offer when people sign up. So but I hadn't learned anything. When I started here in 2017, in September 2018, I thought, I've got to do this. I've got an amazing opportunity as well. I've got this campaign that, you know, I'm meant to be leading. Why don't I just take part in it? So I took part in it. I signed up myself. And yeah, I was very, very lucky because, of course, I'm exposed in my job to the data, the stats, but also amazing people like all of you. It's what my job involves. And that's a privilege, is meeting people who are kind of further ahead on the journey than maybe I am, or people who've shared that journey. So yeah, I was able to take inspiration really quickly. I was thinking, I was like, I got a super, super quick shortcut into kind of how to do that. So yeah, I went from drinking, as so many of us, 1 to 2 bottles of wine a night, although often it was the equivalent of that, but in beer, to, I'm on 858 days today. I've we've got this app called Try Dry, and it's got loads of badges in it. And because I kind of designed the app, I feel I have the right to have every badge in the app.
Like
the
man who can't made, you just give them so
the man
give
who made
badges.
Strava, or the woman who made Strava, must feel the same as me. It's like, I made this thing. Why can't I have all the badges? And they quite rightly, the people who own the data say, you have to earn the badges. And go, yeah, we did. So I kind of like, well, I've got two left. I've got the 1,000-day badge and the 3-year badge. And once I'm done with those, yeah, I've got all the badges. It's like, I'm only 50. I'm motivated by little bits of electronic badge. But hey, it's the way humans are built, right? We kind of love those rewards. And I think this relates to what Danielle was saying about kind of having to shift. It's not just pulling back from something, it's moving towards something. And I think moving toward alternative rewards, even if they are just bits of pixelated colour on a screen, is actually a positive move. Even if it's almost a trick, it's that so many people at the start of the journey are terrified of sobriety, but want to cut back.
Terrified of saying forever, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely right. Terrified of the foreverness of it. Because they're going on a journey. They're making a change, and that feels so far away, so scary, so terrifying. It can have the opposite effect. It can have the effect of actually stopping people making a start or making a change, because you're setting too high a kind of barrier.
If I could, firstly, if I think back to my own Dry January experience, I mean, it wasn't really a Dry January at all. I was one of those people that said, January's rubbish, give me up alcohol for a month will make it even more rubbish. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be a rebel and do things my own way, thinking I was very edgy and rebellious and all these things we tell ourselves, which was actually just a little bit sad. But you know, I remember either on January, I'd be, yeah, having a New Year's Day walk and ending up in a pub to have a couple to clear the hangover, or you know, getting that kind of Sunday feeling on New Year's Day evening that you know Christmas is over and I'll quietly work through a bottle of red wine. But now looking back, one of the main reasons that I firstly didn't start Dry January and secondly, it almost certainly would have failed Dry January, was because I always thought about what I would get from it. What, you know, what's Dry January going to give me? What are the benefits that I'm going to have? How's it going to save me money? How's it going to make my life better? But I never stopped to think about actually what I could give to other people. And this is where everything around the forum that you mentioned comes in. And this is why we have our own forum Over the Influence as well. And I wanted to ask both you, Richard, and Danielle, about the power of connection. And how you both feel that the power of connection can help people either do that month alcohol-free or get the 1,000-day badge or so on.
Yeah, I'm happy to go first on that. I never, ever stop singing and talking and preaching and, you know, evangelizing about connection, because it has been the key thing. It's been the clincher for me for sobriety to stick, but not only stick, but be fun. I've literally created groups of new friends, like I'm talking all over the country. I even met someone who's an OTI member in Dublin. I never want to stop making new alcohol-free connections, because it's several, you know, I suppose benefits, several benefit fold. You get to speak to like-minded people. These people, you know, we're very open and honest. There's no veneer, you know, we're just really open and honest people, because we're bearing our souls sometimes on online saying, oh, you know, here's what I did in the past, or here's what's happened to me, or gosh, alcohol took me down this horrible road, you know. So there's nothing to play it cool about or anything. It's just really honest and genuine. They're genuine connections. And also because then if you make new connections, you can create that life that you think you're going to lack when you go sober. Instead of going, oh, I won't be able to do this with these friends and do that with them, just go and make some new friends. We are all so friendly, the alcohol-free community. If anyone reaches out to me and says, do you want to meet up for coffee? I'm alcohol-free. I'd say yes. I would just do it straight away. You can create the environment that you think you're going to lack, but you know, it will be wholly alcohol free, and you have constant support. Then I was away last weekend, felt a little bit wobbly about my sobriety, texted a couple of sober mates, boom, they just said the right things, and I was like, boom, back on track. So they're my thoughts on that.
So I mean, obviously there is your own Harry's statement that the opposite of addiction is connection. I think it's a great soundbite, and I think it has meaning for people. I also think it's a bit overstated. I'm going to be really blunt here with you guys, if I'm allowed to be a bit controversial. I think it's an overstated claim. I think the opposite of addiction is lack of addiction. And I kind of think playing around with words like that is actually unhelpful for people. But there is a real nugget of truth in it. And I think one of the things we miss about all of this is the fact that we are creatures of our environment. And we don't like to admit that as humans, like we don't want to admit we're motivated by pixelated badges. We don't want to admit that we're creatures of our environment because it makes us feel like we're rats in a cage. And we're humans. We're incredibly creative, talented. We talk about all the things that have been achieved by humans, and very few of them by us. You know, the invention of the iPhone, going to the moon. I didn't do any of those things, but I kind of claim that, yeah, I'm special because I'm human. A human did that. I must be equally special. Unfortunately, you know, we are rats in a cage. We are rats in a cage. And I think that humility for me is really, really important. And therefore, it's an understanding that our environment around us is so important to how we behave. And that for me is at the heart of so many of these issues and debates. And that's kind of also at the core to what makes Dry January Dry January. That's why it's not have a month off when it suits you, folks. It's let's try and as many of us as possible to have a month off at the same time as each other, because that shifts the environment. And why this matters so much is actually ideological. So there is an ideological view that we as humans are individual atoms who have complete control of our lives, and therefore any form of addiction or alcohol habit or anything like that, dependency, mild, moderate, whatever you want to call it, is our fault. Because we're in control, it must be our fault. And that is deeply, deeply stigmatizing ideology. There is an extreme ideology on the other side that says everything is about the world around us and we're not to blame for anything. If only the state would do this, if only the alcohol industry wouldn't exist, if only, and I hear this quite a lot professionally from organisations who I would say probably a little bit more extreme than us, who think that all we need to do is change the environment. And if we use the metaphor of a fish tank here, you know, sometimes we should be saying to the fish, come on fish, you can do this, swim stronger. Be better, fish. Come on, fish. And sometimes we need to change the bloody water, because it's the water that's the problem and is causing the problem. And actually, the point being, it's both. The point I'm making in a really kind of long-winded way, the point I'm trying to make is that this is both and. This is both us and our environment. And Dry January is about working on empowerment and creating us to be stronger fish, stronger people, to resist a difficult environment. But it also works on the environment at the same time by shifting, getting other people to change at the same time. And that for me is where this truth about connection makes sense. If we're stuck in the same environment, it takes superhuman effort to stand out and be different. Whereas if we shift the environment, it makes it so much easier. And by shifting the environment, not only will we help to save all of us who are in a tricky space, but more importantly than that even, will prevent people getting into the situations that all of us have found ourselves in. And I think prevention is so much more powerful than cure in this case. So changing the environment, and this is where we can talk, if you want, for hours I could talk about this, maybe another podcast, on the whole politics of alcohol and you know, influence. Let's talk about the influence of the alcohol industry. Let's talk about the influence of alcohol marketing. Let's talk about the influence of dirty money and where it ends up. That is definitely another conversation. But yeah, for me, Dry January, that sense of community changing at the same time, not going alone, is critical to it. So I hope that kind of gives you an answer.
Richard, I love what you're talking about there, about community and about the environment. And I just want to pick up on something that I've read in your bio, if you don't mind, on Alcohol Change UK, because it's something I've been guilty of in the past. And also, it's one of the main reasons that people struggle to even get started with Dry January. And that is the perception or the thought of what people are going to say, and they're going to have the piss taken out of them. They're going to get shredded for being boring, and they're going to be sober shamed. And your bio here, it says, Richard Piper, from everyday drinker and sober shamer to CEO of an alcohol charity. I think that is brilliant. Well, one, because it's dead honest. And I have been that person as well, Richard, in my drinking days. If I ever saw anybody going out without the drink in the hand, what are you doing? What's the point? What's the problem? What's the issue? And now I've had it happen to me, and still 3 years down the line, and it's god awful. It's quite horrible. Can we just talk a little bit more about that and how people can be so easily put off for even tackling dry January, the thought of that happening to them?
Yeah, and I think whether it's tackling dry January or enjoying dry January or even just taking any action to control your drinking at any time of year, because we obviously work year-round with people, you're spot on. Sober shaming is actually a phrase that I came up with on the day of another podcast. I was working on the Reasons to be Cheerful podcast with David Lloyd and Ed Miliband. And on the way there, I was thinking, yeah, I wanted to talk about this topic, but I didn't have a word for it. I had a coffee. Off. So I went, dang, sober shaming, that alliterates. We launched our Stop Sober Shaming campaign on that podcast. I told my team later that we launched it. this is sometimes how it works, you know. But yeah, the team have really got behind it, and I think it really has. It's not a new concept, but it's just a word that helps, I think, us all to. For me, it's actually really powerful as a phrase because it makes it clear that what you're doing is shaming something, and it shines a light back on the person who's doing the sober shaming. And yeah, as well as that bio, I've also got a blog on our website, which I would encourage anyone who's interested in this to read, called Diary of a Sober Shamer. And it's about me. And it's about how awful I was. How awful I was. And judgmental. All for my own self-preservation. All for my own fragile, horrendous attraction to alcohol. As a part of my identity, about who I was. And identity is a topic we don't talk about enough, I think, as a group. But yeah, this is why it can feel like difficult to leave, because you're not just leaving a substance, you're leaving a life that you've built around it. You know, you think, I had a clear out of t-shirts back in the summer when we were having a clear out.
God,
it's like, how many of them are alcohol brands? What is that? I am a walking advert for something, or I used to be. There were a lot of them at the bottom of the drawer and I hadn't worn them. I did keep a couple for old time's sake. But yeah, you know, it's amazing how we build our lives around this substance. And for me, that is really important. And sober shaming is something that can stop. I know I'm a hopeless optimist, and that's one of my weaknesses. But I kind of genuinely believe that if we can get that message out there and say to people, from tomorrow, commit to never sober shaming again, even if you're a drinker, that would change that environment. That would change that sense of community. And actually, drinkers could have a new connection with non-drinkers, which is mutually non-judgmental, because I think it can work each way. And I think actually we can all respect each other's freedom of choice, which we have with cigarettes, which we have with illicit drugs, but we don't seem to allow for alcohol. Just outrageous.
Danielle, I was going to ask, following on that, have you ever been on the receiving end of sober shaming, or even in the past, were you, dare I say, a sober shamer yourself?
Can you say it?
Wow, try having that after saying that after a couple of drinks.
I don't remember ever sober shaming, probably because the company I kept were out and out drink, you know, with going out to get drunk. So I don't think I've encountered, I don't think I've ever encountered many sober people who just decided to be sober. Have I experienced it myself? I mean, I remember I worked for a sales company a good long while ago now, and the nights out were so, they were so frivolous, let's say, that I decided to keep my sanity and dignity. I wouldn't ever drink on those nights out, you know, big nights out in London and traveling into Europe and stuff like that. And honestly, I experienced the worst sober shaming then. This was like, gosh, about 10 years ago. I experienced the worst sober shaming then when I wasn't even a sober person. It was just, I was staying sober for that night to not behave like a dick, you know. So Yeah. So I would say since I've gotten sober this year, I just must have very bloody lovely people in my life.
It's because you're in such a wonderful community, Danielle.
I know
the secret.
My family were fantastic.
That is good to hear, Danielle. That is so good to hear. It is really common, unfortunately. And I think a lot of people find it really it's really distressing for people, actually. And it can stop people going out and living their life. So,
it can.
I think it's changing though, Richard, even in 18 months. Like when I first, I don't know if this is because, I was in the early days of giving up booze and people thought, oh, Ben will be back here. Give him a few months to get this out of his system and he'll be back drinking with us in the pub soon. Or if it is a genuine kind of societal shift. But I tell people now that I haven't had a drink for 18 months. And actually the majority of comments that come back are positive. Like people go, oh, well done. That's impressive. That takes a load of discipline to be able to do that, fair play, and I wish I could do that. It seems to be more, when I first started it was kind of like I had a few comments kind of like, oh, come on mate, what are you doing, what are you doing that for, you could be boring and all that. But I do feel like there's a genuine societal shift towards more and more, especially because of the lockdowns, especially because health has been on the agenda, top of the agenda now since March last year. We all want to look after ourselves, we all want to be here for longer, we all know that life can be taken away. And therefore, we all kind of want to prioritise our health, I think, more than we ever have done. And I say we, not just us on this call, I mean as a society. So I do hope that if someone's listening to this now and they do have that bit in their brain where they're scared to do something, even if it is just for, I say just, 30 days is fantastic, but if it is for a determined period of time, don't worry about what other people think. And actually, you'll be really surprised at a lot of the positive comments you'll receive. And you know what? Fingers crossed, Richard, eh? Loads of other people are bloody doing Dry January as well.
Yeah, that's why it works with Dry January, as you say. And I think I would never want someone to be put off by it. I do think it's changing in certain... I think it's important that kind of we acknowledge that it's happening in certain subcultures and certain parts, whether it's age, class, ethnicity... but in other places, it's not happening. And I think, this is where we've got to be cautious about making statements about society as a whole. And I think that it depends who and where you are. If you're a 20-year-old bloke living in certain parts of the country, you will be sober shamed mercilessly, even if you only stop drinking at 8 o'clock in the evening, 10 o'clock in the evening. So I think, what you were saying, Danielle, about only being sober, I think we're talking about sober shaming at any moment for any time, not the shaming of people who are permanently sober. I think I'll miss this round, thanks. What's wrong with you? In lightweight, and that culture is really still very prevalent and it's deeply dangerous. So yeah, but I like your positivity, Ben, and I'm embracing it as well. And I think it's important because
that's what we're all about.
Sometimes
we're all about bringing hope and positivity to the world, Richard, just as you are at Alcohol Change UK.
You're right. And sometimes the stories we tell change the world, don't they? So it's important we sometimes
absolutely
help realise that.
There are going to be so many people now who have maybe had a really, really boozy Christmas, but who for a long time have had the seed planted of wanting to make some sort of change with their relationship with alcohol. For me, Richard, it took years. It took years. Oh, maybe I'll do this and maybe I'll take a break and maybe I'll do that. What advice would you give now to somebody that has hammered it over Christmas, wants to make a change, wants to just try alcohol-free life? Like you say, it's not forever. It's not the be-all and end-all. You don't have to use the word sober until the day I die, but just wants to have a taster of what a dry month would be like. What advice would you give?
So I'm going to have to say this. The number one piece of advice is to download the Try Dry app, because that unlocks everything. It unlocks the blogs. It unlocks the email coaching program. It unlocks the online forum, and the whole thing is free. And people will use the app for 3-4 years. It becomes like your best buddy. So I just think, get in there, do it properly. Don't just try going dry on your own. It probably won't work. The stats are it probably won't work, but you probably will have a really kind of less good time. Whereas actually, if you're gonna do it well, do it properly. Do the Dry January campaign. That would be my number one tip.
Okay, so I would say bear in mind that pubs and restaurants and the supermarket all have great alcohol-free alternatives. That's what I've gone to when I felt like I've had a hard day, when I've been out having a meal or been in the pub with my friends, wanting to be part of it. So, you know, having an alcohol-free alternative, it kind of mimics the I'm having a beer, I'm having a nice glass of fizz. And there are, the quality is way up there these days. Way back a few years ago, I don't think it was as good as it is now. But I'm sat here with a Zero Heineken. Don't know if we can say brand names, but there you go. And, you know, that was the game changer for me, to be able to go to my fridge and go, shh. Oh, you know, and just sit down and relax and have that beer in my hand. So you don't have to miss out. You can have those alternatives.
You know what? We never know where it's going to go when we start recording an episode of Over the Influence. We don't have predetermined questions. We like to say it's a chat rather than an interview. We like to follow the tangents. I think what's really interesting about what we've just all talked about is that this has just been a conversation around reevaluating your drinking habits. And I think, you know what, for me, if you're listening to this now, that's the main thing I'd love you to take away from this episode, is have some conversations about it with the people in your life. You know, you don't have to commit to being sober forever. Richard, as you said at the beginning, you're existing to end alcohol harm. You're not saying that alcohol as a substance is evil and bad, but the harm that comes from, that can come from alcohol, is what you're working to end. About not judging, about behaviour change campaign, not a charity campaign. You know, it is about just opening up the conversation, isn't it? And it's about opening up the conversation with friendly ears. It's not just about being on your own, being sober for 30 days. It's about being part of something that others are doing. Talk to them, find out their motivations, find out how they're getting on, where have they struggled, where are they doing really well. You know, it's conversation, isn't it? That's what Dry January is about. It's to get it on the agenda, isn't it? It's not about X thousand people having 30 days sober. It's about getting this to the front of people's minds at a time of year when they can decide to make longer lasting changes if they want to.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about changing your relationship with alcohol and your relationship with everyone else and their relationship. It's about our collective relationship with alcohol, right? That's the point you're making.
It's been really interesting, this conversation. I've really, really enjoyed it. Before we just say thank you and goodbye to Richard, Danielle, I've got one question for you. You are in triple figures, alcohol-free, 150 days. Sum it up. What's it like, alcohol-free life?
Absolutely. There's not even words to describe it. It's amazing. It's absolutely fantastic. I feel amazing. I feel happy, you know. I don't think I've ever really felt genuinely happy as an adult. And now that I feel like I've finally cracked it, you know, in sobriety, I genuinely feel really happy and at peace in my life. So if you want to feel happy and peaceful, go alcohol free. There you go.
Bloody hell, that's ace. That's ace. It's my favourite thing. It's so good.
And Danielle, if people want to find you online, where can they do that?
So my Instagram name is DC is alcohol free, with underscores in between.
Absolutely brilliant. And thank you so much, Danielle. You are a much loved and much valued member of our community at Over the Influence. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Richard, we need to invite you back onto the podcast for several more episodes because there's so much to go at. Thank you for your time. If people are interested in Dry January and finding out more about what you do and all the fantastic work you do at Alcohol Change UK, where can they find more about you?
www.alcoholchange.org.uk is our website. You can sign up to be an activist if you're interested in the political side. There's loads of stuff in there about how we can take on the world and actually change that environment that we're all in. But if you're just at the stage where you're thinking about your own drinking at this stage, literally the best place to start is the Play Store or the Apple Store. Look for Try Dry, download it, get going, get started. Make that commitment to a bit of self-accountability, self-improvement, and enjoy it. Don't see it as a losing something. See it, as Danielle has just beautifully summarised, as gaining something.
Hi. I'm Nicole from Brisbane in Australia, and I've just hit 6 months booze free.
I was a beer girl and I stopped drinking because I hated the way I was always bargaining with myself about it. Always thinking, will I have a beer? Won't I? What do I have on tomorrow? Well, better not. Ah, just one more. I was stuck in a horrible loop and I was just so sick of myself. These days, I feel so much calmer and like there's so much more room in my mind for other things. And who knew how good so many of the alcohol-free beers are? I also saved so much money that I took myself on an island holiday for a week and still had change. I can highly recommend giving a stint like Dry January a go, and Over the Influence is just the place to be to do it. Go on, you know you'll feel better and I promise you won't regret it. There's only hangovers and expense to lose and a world of wonders to gain.
Oh, hi, my name's Jeanette and I'm now alcohol-free for around 150 days, which is a miracle, to say the least. I've been trying to go alcohol-free for about a decade, on and off, doing a month here, a week here, 2 months here, you know the score. But now I'm 150 days in and absolutely loving it. We'll never go back, won't look back. Life is so much better. Being part of the OTI community has helped me vastly. It's fun. It looks at what you're gaining, not what you're missing out, which was a mistake I made before. I always thought I was missing out on life when I wasn't drinking. Oh my God, how wrong was I? Life is great without a drink. Just try it.
Hi, my name's Helen, and I stopped drinking alcohol almost exactly 7 years ago. When I stopped drinking, I really felt a lot of benefits. My health was better, my finances were better, my attention was better, and I really felt like I started to kind of grow up as a person and discover myself. And the benefits just increased year by year by year. At times, it was still difficult. At times, even now, I feel like sometimes it's hard to explain to people why I don't drink. And sometimes still I feel like I'm a bit alone on this journey. But a couple of years ago, I found Over the Influence, and that really changed things a lot for me. When I started to listen to the podcast, it immediately felt like I just had these new amazing friends who were like in the same gang as me. Shazza, Freddie and Ben were on this journey and they were feeling things that were like the same as what I was feeling. And I just felt like I wasn't alone in this journey anymore. When the team announced that they were going to start a new exciting platform, I couldn't wait to see what it was. And as soon as they launched Over the Influence, I joined it straight away. Again, this has just opened a whole new world to me. It's been brilliant to be part of the Over the Influence community. I find that it's just so nice to have this massive connection with all these like-minded people. I feel like we're all in a bit of a gang in this together. And whenever I feel myself wavering, whenever I think, oh, this is a bit hard, I feel a bit like I'm on my own, you know, I can just read blog posts, I can read comments, discussion groups, I can post things, and everyone's there, everyone's supportive, positive, and got each other's backs. So I'd really encourage anyone who's even got the tiniest bit of curiosity to go for it. It's not easy, but you can do it. Anyone can do it. If I can do it, anyone can do it. So go for it, everyone. And good luck with Dry January, February, March. And come along to Over the Influence and be part of an amazing community. Thank you. Bye.